Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, Odyssey Jones, grand opening, grand closing. In the Lazy River, ice cold takes of Bash in Berlin, No Mercy, and a preview of All Out and Invader Club. Eh, we'll just probably talk about Sid because we didn't really get around to saying anything official. So, you know, more Sid thoughts because I watched a lot of Sid like early in the week. I think Chris did too.
Maybe I did too. No, I did. I've watched a bunch of Sid. I just never actually, latched into any one match, but yeah. I kind of watched the whole Survivor Series build.
Oh, okay, cool. So you can have some WWF stuff. I can have some WCW, NWA stuff. That'll be cool. So we'll just do that. So this is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. It's football season, and you can tell because Collision had its lowest number at its regular time slot. I think it was like 239,000 watched it or something like that. It's time to not give a crap about wrestling for a while.
It's going to be really hard to where wrestling slots in against the football schedule. It is very hard for these wrestling B shows to even hope to make a dent. You know, even SmackDown's going to have down numbers, but at least SmackDown has a built-in audience.
They'll be going to USA as opposed to Network too, so that's gonna be a downer. I have the football game on. It just kicked off the NFL season, and I had forgot about the new kickoff rules that they literally stole the XFL's kickoff. It's so weird. It's just this is not my football. But yeah, everybody's gonna be moving around all over the place because NXT's gonna be moving to the CW in October. I think Rampage and Collision are going to end up moving to True TV with this new deal that could be announced any day now. But yes, it is football season. So gird your loins for just content that doesn't matter. And we'll try and give an entertaining show still. But we'll start with a passing of Viano 5. Passed away. Ray Mendoza, real name. I believe 69 years old or something thereabouts. Famous for Chris and I, at least, as part of that crew of luchadors who came into WCW for your first hour of Nitro. Like just one of these barrel-chested dudes who could still move and stuff. You know, he looks like a brawler. You can tell underneath the mask he has like just grating scars and stuff like that. There was a clash where they had like an eight man that was really, really good, but there was nothing really standout, but just solid, you know, first hour get over the guys who were getting over, like Ray or La Parca.
He would like tag with Silver King and all that stuff.
Yes.
Like basically all the Rudos and all those guys would be together, and Villano 5 was very much just, he was enhancement talent, you know, polished enhancement talent, but he was also pretty old at that point, even when he was doing it.
Yeah,
he was already like 45 or something.
Late 40s, I think. Or late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
Also part of the worst match I think I've ever seen. I actually did watch, and there was a Triple Mania 2015. It was like Viano 3, 4, and 5 versus like Murder Clown, Psycho Clown,
Ice
Cream. That match is just god awful. It's one of the worst things you ever see. It's like, I don't know why. I just like, it was like one of those things where it's like people were hyped for this was the time where like Triple Mania was like a hot thing, I think, or something to that effect, or something down there was hot. So it's like, oh, you gotta watch this show. And then that match came on, and it was like, this is horrible.
Well, that Triple Mania, you know what? That was like an all-time bad wrestling show. Remember, they had all the production issues and everything, too. I mean, it wasn't Legends of Wrestling bad in terms of the work necessarily across the card, but there were a number of botched finishes. You had the Murder Clown, Psycho Clown versus the Villanos thing. I want to say the broadcast just cut to black for a minute at one point. Like, there were a lot of issues with that AAA Mania. That was, like, it was 2013 or 2014, right? Like, that was right around the time.
It was 2015. This was a 2015. 2015.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I may have just watched it because of how bad people said it was.
Yeah, no, this is a notable. I remember this show being very bad, but it's been a long time since I've watched it.
Right.
But I remember watching it, thinking it was shit at the time, and kind of it's now been remembered as one of those all-time bad shows.
Yeah, but in terms of the work that we got to see here in the States, as opposed to, like, look, I'm not a big Lucha Libre guy. There are other guys who could eulogize how good he was in Lucha Libre. I've only seen a little bit of it. I thought it was solid, you know? I got nothing bad to say about him. Odyssey Jones, earlier this week, reported by Fightful, removed from the WWE roster. Apparently there are some domestic abuse allegations out there, and I am guessing he has not been cut because they're going to see if he beats these or not, but he has been taken off the roster, quote unquote, just in case.
And his entire angle has been aborted.
There wasn't even a mention of anything. Yeah, it's
no. That's memory holds. Yeah, that never happened.
Odyssey Jones, who's that? New Day? No, they've always been two people.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, you accidentally memory hold Big E. No, he doesn't exist either.
Yeah, they never had a big guy with them at any point.
I think everybody's going to trash WWE for you know, its past, but this is the way, I think, in some ways, this is also a positive for a company that's going to be tarnished fairly regularly in the coming years with the whole Vince McMahon scandal. And we talked about last week, the documentary coming up, that trailer just came out, and it looks like Vince is just out of touch with reality in terms of how people perceive him, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I mean, look, you don't fire a guy and go too far over the skis, but you don't say, hey, we're gonna defend our client here. Take him off TV, take him off the roster, and then you can quietly release him afterwards if he's found guilty.
Yeah, I mean, I think one way or another, Odyssey Jones is done. He'll never get another push like this by this company ever again. Because it's not just these domestic abuse allegations. There's also his prior posts and stuff.
Right. I had forgotten about those.
Yeah, all the transphobic stuff that was out there. And it's not just the transphobic stuff. Like, he was a poster. He likes to post bad crap. And so, like, you start to wonder if there's just a body of work around this guy, and that it's not worth the investment.
They literally teach you in WWE, I think, when you get signed, wipe your social media feed.
Yeah, right.
Wipe it. And pay for a company to do it. Don't just do it yourself. Pay for professionals to go in there and say, hey, we need this stuff, you know, memory hold pretty much, and get it off the internet archive and all those other things. Yeah, I had forgot about that. And even if he does come back, I mean, you had a big angle going, and Triple H is maybe better at Vince than this, but if they've decided to push you and you screw it up, they don't forget those types of things.
No, and especially it's, you know, all Xavier Woods said is we didn't have anything to do with this, but it does sort of seem like Woods and Kofi are completely washing their hands of Odyssey Jones as well.
Wasn't our idea either, probably.
So they've washed their hands of this entirely, and I've even seen some murmur of bringing back Omos. Basically to do the storyline.
Oh, God.
He apparently goes on up, up, down, down.
No, he's a fun character. Don't get me wrong, but he is a once a year attraction. Let's put it that way.
I know. But you're right. No, you don't need to actually do like a, you know, he doesn't need to become a full-time wrestler again. But like if they actually want to do the storyline, they have other people they can do that story.
And that's very, very true. And then, you know, all the members of the Final Testament or something can just run into him for a bit because they all know what to do there.
Mm-hmm.
And better news for WWE, Asuka has decided to re-sign a multi-year contract. She is still out on injury leave, but looks like probably this is the last deal, I would guess, before a Legends contract, given that she is in her early 40s. She's a pleasure. She's one of my favorites.
She's had an amazing career in WWE. It's been amazing.
For a woman who can't speak English, hanging this long in a Vince McMahon company is something to behold. I mean,
in high profiles, it's not hanging around like JTG.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Like this is somebody who had a 530 something title, like day title run.
They
as the
know
Empress.
What they have in her. Is a point. Is they know that she's talented.
She's been
great.
Utilized, heavily throughout. Not always maximized, sure.
No,
but
not
like,
maximized,
utilized,
but utilized. That's a good,
utilized.
That's a good
yeah.
way to say it. And very, very well liked. By people backstage, by talent, et cetera, et cetera. You would be hard pressed to find somebody who has a crossword to say about Asuka. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I hesitated to put this on the rundown, but I'm going to talk about it anyways. I have not read the filing, nor do I really want to, but it's news. As reported by the Wrestling News, Brian Lass outfit out there with Mike Sempervivi, three former talents terminated by AEW have brought a lawsuit against All Elite Wrestling, among others. The suit brought by announcer Kevin Kelly and wrestlers Brandon and Brendan Tate, a.k.a. Dalton Castle's boys, was filed on August 30th in Philadelphia County, Pennsylvania Court of Common Pleas by attorney Stephen P. New, who's Coronet's guy, and Benjamin Barron, is seeking to void the arbitration clause of their talent contracts, as well as requesting the court certify a class action suit against AEW over claims the company is misclassifying its wrestling talent as independent contractors rather than employees. Also part of this suit is that whole Ian Riccoboni, Kevin Kelly dust up within corporate speak. And here's what I will say without having read the complaint. I think these types of complaints going after the independent contractor clause are folly. I don't think it'll ever happen because it's going to be the onus is going to be on the talents for signing it. That said, I don't think people can just dismiss this stuff offhand no matter what I think of Stephen P. New. Nothing personal against the guy. I've just kind of looked at other filings he's done. And he's a one-person shop out of West Virginia who's a big wrestling fan. I'm just saying it might be my big loss snobdom coming in here when it comes to him. But that said, both Kevin Kelly and the boys have some smoke there in terms of dealing with AEW corporate. Now, look, the Tate's issue was on them. They were knuckleheads. They didn't want to fly. They didn't want to drive out to a different airport to fly to an international show, I think it was, or something to that effect. So they kind of no-showed a gig and they got fired. But Tony Khan went on record and talked about it. That's a bad thing. What you need to learn to say is
nothing.
All personnel issues will be handled internally, and we have no comment at this time. Thank you. Next question. But Tony was a little bit open about it. I have been on record on this show as saying Kevin Kelly, I think, has a very good case if a lawyer can make it for certain things, for damages and stuff, depending, and this is the big part, this is my qualifier, depending on if he went through the proper channels of human resources to complain about, say, also the Ian Riccoboni post on the Voices of Wrestling Discord channel. And other things. But, of course, I haven't read what's being alleged in the filing, so I can't comment on that. Do you have any further comments about this whole thing?
I don't have any. Okay. You know, it's like the independent contractor thing, I don't think the time that's finally going to get resolved in any way, shape, or form.
It's the Rosetta, not the Rosetta Stone, the Holy Grail.
It's the White Whale.
Wrestling loss.
Right,
yes. It's the unicorn. Like,
It's the Moby Dick White Whale of wrestling, right? Like, it's the union, the wrestlers' union will always be the amazing fantasy of if the boys just had a union, it would be better.
That said, it would be amazing if all that glut of mid-card talent in AEW unionized.
Oh, my God.
And were the first.
Oh, my God. And you know what's funny is this. Theoretically, Tony Khan, by over-glutting the mid-card with that many people, theoretically has the union vote sitting there passively.
Yes.
By having like a punch.
Guys, I'm doing this for you guys. Well, thanks a lot. We'll take your company. Appreciate it. And it would be fascinating to watch all the people who are like, you know, WWE really needs a union to stick it to Vince. And then the union ends up coming in and going, you know, Mr. Khan. And Tony would play ball for a while.
He would have to. He's definitely invested in him. Just looking at AEW this week, he's very invested in looking like the good guy constantly.
Yes,
The difference between him and McMahon, although it's in both cases sort of pathological, McMahon sort of reveled in not being liked. And Tony Khan sort of like revels in coming off as the good guy, the benevolent benefactor.
Yeah. Not a lot. I didn't write down anything about ratings, but I remember Raw was, down a tad because it's Labor Day. NXT and Dynamite were fairly close. NXT was up. AEW was down. I think it was like 20,000 separating it. So we'll see what happens when it goes on the CW for that big Chicago push. So instead, we'll just go to the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, whatever we had time for. We had two WWE shows on the weekend, and we have a preview for an AEW show. So let's get to it. Bash in Berlin, Ice Cold Takes. That was a good show. I thought Cody and Kevin Owens as an opener was great. And, it was a solid show for the most part. Other than that, I was disappointed a little bit in Gunther and Randy Orton.
Because it was more
of a Randy Orton match than a Gunther match.
Right.
But also, Randy Orton is like in his, I made the joke, he's in his Brian Cage phase. He's not the thin, lithe, tall guy anymore. He's a beast. He's bigger than Gunther now. That should have been a Hoss match, and it wasn't.
It's weird. Like Orton's modern match, I think, calling it lazy or whatever, you know.
I did not call it lazy.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. But like, I feel like that's like the obvious cliche about it. I think what's frustrating about Orton, especially as he goes through these like body transformations, and he's had multiple throughout his career, is that like the match style doesn't change to reflect the new body. I don't need him jumping off the top doing cross bodies like he did when he was like in his early 20s.
Yeah.
Though those looked crazy. He used to have insane like vertical for a guy his size. But I would like to see, as you're saying, I'd like to see him have more of a Hoss match. I want to see this guy brawl, and he doesn't brawl. he does the Randy Orton stuff, like the mid-career Randy Orton stuff now.
Yeah, I forgot to say at the top, if you hear my air conditioner, it's because, dude, it hit 111 degrees out here today.
111?
Yes, it was hotter than it was most of the summer today. This is Jesus. Ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
So I apologize if you guys hear that in the background, because I'm hearing it in my headphones right now.
It's September 5th. It's 111 out there.
I know. It's weird that this happened. And then they close all the water parks like mid-August. So like, it's like, oh, you're just dying for a swimming pool out here.
It's like something's wrong with the planet or something.
Yeah, there's not.
Yeah.
it's just all shifted because like winter's now shifted to like March. Too. It's just weird out here, at least. I liked CM Punk, Drew McIntyre, too, for the most part, but boy, did that seem like a definitive ending that right. They just decided to continue on Raw. It's like four finishers.
I hated that.
I kind of hated it, too.
Four finishers, the Chekhov's gun of being so hung up on vengeance that it costs you the victory, and that still not costing him the victory.
Oh, yeah.
And getting the bracelet back. To circle back around to this on Raw, on one hand, it's like I appreciate that Drew McIntyre and CM Punk has been a fantastic program for both Punk and McIntyre and the company, and the fans are invested in it, all of these things. On the other hand, I can't help but feel like if you wanted to continue this after Bash at Berlin, you've gotta just book this match differently.
Yes.
McIntyre needs to win.
Yes.
He needs to win by like handcuffing CM Punk so that he can't even move to get to him. And Drew McIntyre's mocking him with the bracelet as he's touching all of the things and he's dangling it in front of Punk. And
yes.
Punk's like crying, like, I'm gonna kill you. And Drew like is cackling as he's tapping each one of the things.
You know, there. I think we did. We bring this up last week. There's a lot of parallels in some way to the Paige Swerve story over on AEW, where it's like they're booking things weird in terms of not getting to what they want to get to.
Oh, and, this week, Swerve Strickland is a great guy that we've always loved who cares about families, and I won't hear otherwise.
Yeah, no, you would think, yeah, Drew would kind of do that whole strutting thing. I like that idea, dangling the bracelet. And then Punk just cannot take it. On Monday, he comes in, he's the hell with this. I don't care about rules. I don't care what you think about me. I just want to beat up Drew McIntyre some more.
But yeah, you have him on a quest begging Pierce, what do I have to do to get this guy locked in a cage? Like, I don't want to be able to escape. I don't want any outside anything. You know, basically setting up the cage match that they need to have to blow this off. But Punk needed to lose here if you want to continue this feud. But the way they did it, it was like they were so hung up on having a feel-good moment for the crowd and then splitting the baby and continuing the feud afterwards.
Yeah, no, that's a very good analogy there. The other two matches, the women's tag match was okay. And then I didn't like the Terror Twins versus the Judgment Day because it's that whole thing of one guy beating up a stable of geeks. And it's just like, let stables have some credibility where it's not four guys just getting beat up by one guy, et cetera, et cetera. That's not my jam. So it was fine. There was nothing insulting about it. It was just, you know, we needed to figure out a way to extend this feud somewhat.
Yeah, and my biggest critique of this show is there was just a little, and I get why they did it from a business standpoint, especially when you hear how much they were charging everyone in Berlin. Oh my God, did you hear how much these tickets were, Jeff?
At first or at the end? At first they were expensive, I remember that, but they eventually came down a bit. Well, what did you
hear? But people were paying upwards of 2,000 euros.
Good Lord.
I know. So like
Crowd was hot though. I mean,
crowd was hot. But I also think when, you know, and then when they were announcing, oh, highest grossing gate ever for an arena show, that's how they got there, is they were fleecing them. So they needed to make sure it was a feel good show. And I think that's the one thing that hurt this show in terms of the art value of it, is that like you had certain finishes and stuff that were designed to be crowd pleasers and would have been perfectly fine as one offs, but they don't really think about what's happening, you know, this Monday.
Although the crowd made it for me. I gotta be
Oh,
honest with you.
Crowd's great.
It was one of those things where it's just like, yeah, they're hot for this, hot for this, hot for this. And the opener really did. It still was a solid show. It just wasn't a great show. Going to the next night in Denver, Colorado, NXT. What can I say? There was only one real stinker, and that was the Kalani, your girl Kalani Jordan and Wendy Chu.
Yeah.
I'm laughing during that match the whole time, thinking of what you think of Kalani Jordan. And oh, she's actually the heel. She's actually the heel.
Yes.
Kind of a thing. My favorite personally was the opener of the Axiom, Nathan Frazer versus Chase University, just especially because of Andre Chase and how spectacular he was in this match. You know, the turn was kind of expected.
Yeah, no, Rich was laying it on really thick, but it was like, it was kind of weird because you weren't really sure where it was going. Again, we're, you know, always reversing where it looks like Axiom and Frazier are going to split up, and instead everyone who goes up against Axiom and Frazier splits up.
Yes.
Which I actually kind of like they're
that's kind of funny. They're kind of like the rock that everybody else smashes against.
Yes. Yeah, you touch them, and then that leads to y'all splitting up.
I forgot to mention, because I don't think we're going to circle back to Raw unless you wanted to. Joe Tessitore had his first show.
Yeah.
And with the exception of a couple names or moves here and there, solid. I love having real broadcaster voice on wrestling. Like back in the territory days, you'd get like newscasters and weathermen and stuff like that who you know, Bob Cottle, Dave Brown, they'd give gravitas to it. People will kind of great at when he gets excited because he can sometimes force it on college football. But I think once he combines it again, it's going to be Morrow without the rap references. I think he's going to be fine. I really did enjoy his presence on Raw.
Yeah, I liked him too. I thought he was, you know.
And Wade's the right choice, as it was told to me
yes.
yesterday by my partner over on the Dynamite show, because Corey would be trying to do Bobby Heenan with him. And Wade's a little bit more straight.
No, Wade actually was helping out on move calling at various points. And I thought he was very, very graceful about doing it, too. He was always helping and assisting, never correcting, but doing it in a way. I distinctly remember at one point Wade coming in and sliding in and saying Sambo suplex for Joe Tessitore. And that's just one of the several occasions in the evening where I thought Wade was very, very good at helping guide someone through their first night without stepping in and doing their job.
Without making them look bad either.
Right, exactly. No, Tessitore didn't look bad. It didn't look like this was the Wade Barrett show. It was really nicely done.
Roxanne Perez and Jada Parker was my other highlight. Jada Parker over delivering.
Yeah, no, right? It's really interesting who seems to get wrestling kind of on a more primal level. And in a weird way, being a gymnast, from what I'm seeing in NXT, seems to work against these women in terms of adapting to the ring. And the women who seem to be making a better adaptation are like kind of the more physical athletes.
It's interesting you say that, because I think the best thing said about this was Brian Alvarez, who has taught gymnastics, and he mentioned Kalani Jordan's first match being really a really good wrestling match, and then they decided to make her a gymnast doing wrestling moves. And I agree. Jada Parker comes from women's soccer. She played women's soccer at LSU, I believe, and so she's learning. She's not kicking the ball or anything in the ring, you know, as opposed to the gymnasts who are doing their gymnastics in the ring. And it's one of those things where it's like, yes, Ole's right. You got to make it look like a fight in some ways. And gymnasts
Jada Parker
don't.
Already has that kind of aura. It does sort of feel like a fight with her.
Yeah. And I think, Roxanne's phenomenal.
Yeah. She's great. Yeah.
You know, despite being diminutive, she can help somebody through a match. Yeah. I liked this a lot.
Wish this feud had had more time to sort of breathe and be something where you could legitimately believe in Jada Parker, or even if you didn't get all the way to believing in her, really vibe on her story and have a clear sense of who she is coming out of her title match.
Like that smack should have been like week two of a 6-week build.
Right. Rather than, and she should have gotten, you know, she should have won the battle royal before the last pay-per-view. And we have this 6 weeks of her as the number one contender, maybe fending off some challenges to her number one contendership, having some promo. It really let us know. The point of Roxanne Perez as a heel champion is not Roxanne Perez. It's all the people she's against.
Yeah.
So don't waste these opportunities to tell us who Jada Parker is.
I'm going to save Obafemi and Tony D'Angelo for the last because I really want to talk about it a little bit. Zach Wentz and Wes Lee. It was good. But it's also like one of those things where it's like it's a grudge match and they're doing flippy do stuff and it's
right,
just like,
right. So like on one hand, Zach Wentz is an exceptional athlete, and I know I'm super down on the guy, so I want to just start off with like his positives.
Right.
He's a great athlete. He does some incredible things. That said, he does not seem to understand wrestling psychology in the slightest, nor have any real interest in wrestling psychology. It's the Brian Cage school of get your shit in and make that shit look cool, and he does that. But like this match, there should have been a story in this match. There should have been hatred in this match, and there had to be a lot of narrative beats in this match. Like there should have been, because these guys have a long history. You know, there's a lot of story that needs to actually be in a you know, heated, bloody grudge match. And that wasn't really there. And I think, the story that I guess ultimately they decided to tell is that Zach Wentz belongs in NXT. If I'm trying to understand everything here. Wesley says to Zach Wentz, "You screwed up. You know, you did your little Hitler impression a couple years ago, and that got you fired. Whoopsie doopsles. And, you know, while you were recovering from all of that,
it's been a heck of a week for Hitler, by the way, but we'll talk about that after the show.
I got to feel bad for that guy. It's really taking it.
Yeah.
So Wesley, you know, wins the singles title, basically does establish himself as a, you know, like an elite level talent, like an all-time great North American champion, everything like that. And then he turns heel going into this match. I think what needed to me, the most obvious thing in the world here is that Wesley needed to show to Zach Wentz in a heartbreaking way, I've completely outclassed you.
Yes.
And you are not on my level.
That's a better story.
When I say this, I mean it. You don't keep up with me anymore. I'm Sean, you're Marty. And instead we have Marty beating Sean. Like, well, that's the story we're getting here.
Yeah, and the added difficulty of Wentz getting the TNA X Division title the previous night on the TNA show kind of hampered that. Ethan Page and Joe Hendry I hated only for the ending, because it was my same issue with the Okada-Kyle Fletcher match on Dynamite. We watch all that just for a nutshot. One,
yeah.
Two, three. It's like, screw you.
No, it definitely, you know, it's jumping rails a little bit, but like Okada's matches are in real danger of being tune out for the first 15 minutes of the match and come and catch the final five.
But then they had like on social media, they did the handshake deal with Joe Hendry and Shawn Michaels. It was like, hey, anytime, blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, he just got screwed out there. It's not like a good, you don't shake a guy's hand and go, good game.
Well, there's like that. And then also the fact that Joe Hendry was like, I'm here for a long time to stay, you know, leading into all of this.
And now he's not. You know what's going to happen. And I can't. Ethan Page is going to be a surprise for Royal Rumble. And, you know, most people know him because, oh, he's the NXT champ. And then they'll have Joe Hendry come in and throw him out. And nobody in that arena will know who Joe Hendry is.
Yeah.
Real
quickly on Joe Hendry too, I saw a really fun interview from him this week talking about the writing of the theme song.
Uh-huh.
And my goodness, Jeff, Hendry put a lot of thought into the writing of the theme song. He was actively involved in it, but he got as granular as BPMs, thinking about how many beats per minute are actually the optimal BPM for crowds to clap along to.
Chris, the best songs are written on a napkin in about 5 minutes in a diner when you need one last song for the album. That's what I've learned.
But tell that to Joe Hendry, my man.
No,
a lot of people believe in this guy.
The Hitler joke was about the what's the guy's name? Not Tyler. I can't even remember his name anymore. The conservative pundit who's now just doing X shows. He had a historian who said that Winston Churchill was the bad guy in World War II.
I still remember years ago when Marianne Williamson put out one of my all-time favorite tweets ever on that website, which is, I apologize for tweeting a picture of Hitler earlier. I had too much coffee. You can't write. You can't write better. Drill would be hard pressed to write a
All
better.
Right. This Obafemi Tony D'Angelo match, in theory, what they were going for was very, very good. Don't get me wrong. It was. They were looking at Tony D'Angelo as kind of a Kurt Angle guy, going up against their version of Vader, Obafemi. That said, after watching a lot of Sid this week, and having Ole Anderson stuck in my head, why is Obafemi ever leaving his feet? Like Ole Anderson has a famous story where, like, the Andersons are facing the Rock and Roll Express, and Ricky Morton, like, goes, and then I'll hit you and you'll sell. It's like, why would I sell for you? You know, you need to give an excuse. You need to, because a guy that's skinny, kind of small like you, I'm this big burly dude. You're only going to get me off my feet once. And it's going to pop that crowd. But that's going to be it. So you need to pick your spot here carefully. That's kind of how I felt about this match, is that this was a match where they basically said, all right, D'Angelo's going to throw you around because we want to see how you sell. It almost felt like that kind of match versus like having an actual like hoss match. And Tony D'Angelo's never been booked as the scrappy underdog suplex guy like that.
He has been, but that's only because Tony D'Angelo's booking has been absolutely all over the place. Between D'Angelo and Swerve Strickland are in a heavy race right now for the most inconsistent booking of 2024.
Okay.
In terms of babyface, heel, match style, all that stuff. No, D'Angelo has done the suplexy babyface underdog thing, but in spurts when it has been called for. Then there have been other times where he's been the bad guy.
Yeah, it just wasn't the gimmick of this match where it's like, oh, I don't know if I can beat Obafemi.
Right. No, the whole gimmick of this match should have been two guys – exhibiting power on one another, right? The build to this match, and this gets back to just my general belief that the build should reflect what the match is ultimately going to be, right? Like, the build to this match was power struggle. Two guys in a diner looking at each other, basically going, I have so much power that I could crush you, and I'm not going to. I'm waiting till this match. So when we get to that match, unbridled power. Two guys just clubbering on each other. And Obafemi, in direct conflict, should get the better of D'Angelo, which then leads D'Angelo. And I guess you can still do this as an underdog babyface with heelish tendencies to use other tactics to regain leverage. But ultimately, the crux of this match and the focus of this match should have been power. Who is more powerful? And with Obafemi always trying to just reassert his full frontal, just brute force power, and D'Angelo trying to do that, but also having to pepper in some dirty tricks and stuff along the way here to, you know, even the odds, because he can't win a punch for punch.
Yeah, I like Femi. It feels like they've now got painted themselves into a corner a little bit with him. In terms of, he is the massive power guy who also holds your number two belt. And everybody's now thinking, you know, it's like when you give the Warrior the Intercontinental title.
Right. Though would be interesting to do, especially if you're ready to call up Obafemi, a title for title match with Ethan Page, where Ethan Page wins both belts, and you get it off of Femi. You're gonna have Page. I'm kind of over Page winning on banana peels, but
Yeah.
like you have Page beat. Maybe you have Page beat Femi clean. You just kind of
And that,
re-solidify.
yeah, that'll never happen because WWE gonna WWE, and
I
your
know.
heel champs can never have that kind of, with the exception of like a Brock, they never get that credibility of being able to win clean. Like they should, like, and I've complained about this for years. Like heels shouldn't cheat because they just want to, because they want to cheat. They should cheat because they have to cheat.
Have to. Right. Yeah, they get cornered. Like they want to show that they're the better talent. But when that fails, they hate losing, so they'll cheat.
Yeah, it floors me. Any other thoughts from the NXT Weekly TV this week?
From the NXT Weekly, Toxic Attraction 3.0 is very, very boring.
And I like two of the three of them. That's the problem. I love Jesse and I love Fallon Henley. Is that the name?
Yeah, it's just not doing anything for JC Jane.
No, it's not.
I'm ready for her to be doing her own thing.
See, it's so weird because she was fine in Toxic Attraction because she was like the secondary character who came out and kind of overshadowed the redhead. And then
Gigi, yeah.
Gigi, and then she got put in this Chase U story where she and Thea Hale were a fun couple, and those sketches were fun, and then we didn't have anything to do with her. And so we put her in yet another stable, and the stable is it's bad because it's a meta stable. It's all about we worked the indies and you didn't. Those gimmicks suck. They always suck because nobody really knows all this.
Right.
They just know that they're watching wrestlers right now. It's I and Jasmine Nix does nothing for me, so.
Jasmine Nix does less and less. She's someone who the more viewings, less I see. I wish it was the other way. I feel bad saying that about somebody, but I just don't see it with her.
Oh, my other joke was Charlie Dempsey starting to look like 70s Roger Daltrey.
Yes.
And you know what they're doing? They may be doing Tommy with the deaf kid. Can we get rid of the he's listening to earbuds and he's deaf jokes? There were two deaf jokes in a row on that because he takes out his headphones. And he says, "What did you say?" We've now
See, I
heightened the deaf jokes to be he's not only
See, I
deaf.
didn't even know he was deaf, so this is another problem.
Yes, Miles Bourne. That's the name. Yeah,
Right,
no.
no, Miles Bourne. I didn't realize Miles Bourne was
Yes,
deaf.
that's the
And
entire joke of the of
that's another problem. It's going completely over a decent chunk of the audience's head.
Yeah, they said it like for 2 weeks and now it's just been a complete joke. But yes, if Miles Bourne starts playing pinball, we might but Ren Sinclair, awesome yet again,
Yeah,
as the comedic
Rent's.
foil.
No, I know. I'm disappointed. No Kendall Gray this week. Maybe they're repackaging her and seeing, like, what can we do to launch her up? I'm ready for some Kendall Gray on this show. Adriana Rizzo does nothing.
Does
She's
nothing
just,
for me.
does nothing, right? Like she's not even a good character though,
No.
right?
No, she's
Yeah.
we need an Italian, we need a Gumar, but we're gonna make her the mob boss type thing. Yeah.
No, I mean, it merely makes you appreciate how much better Carmella was than this.
Yes.
Like, Carmella would run circles around Adriano Rizzo.
Yeah, cuz Carmella throws herself into a role. I mean, she is an 11 at all times, and Adriana's kind of doing a 6 or 7 here. She's still a little uncertain about it. She's new. She doesn't want to overact. I get it, but she
Oh,
comes off
she
as
doesn't
hesitant.
want to overact. She is basically doing Lenny and Squiggy.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, what
Look.
are you guys doing? Oh, jeez Louise, guys.
Use guys.
You guys, what are you guys doing? Like they
Where's
showed
the
her like,
gabagool? You know, it's all,
yeah.
You know, it's all,
they
yeah.
showed her exactly 60 seconds of a supercut of all mafia movies. And she's us most of those lines.
That's true. Do we want to move on to AEW? Do you have something else in here?
No, we can move on to AEW.
Okay, cool. A worthless pay-per-view this weekend. Congratulations if you're paying full freight for it, because you're going to be one of the few, I think. But as Tony says, he books for the sickos. So All Out, live from Hoffman Estates, Illinois, a 8-match show that will probably be expanded to about 15 by the time we're outside of Rampage and Collision. And this felt like cramming for the test a bit. It did, the Dynamite show, which we interplay in this. Starting with a singles match for the AEW International Championship, Will Ospreay versus Pac. Like, I'm not even expecting any title changes on this thing. I'm looking at the thing. I was like, nope, 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 and nope. Do you think Pac wins this?
Maybe just
given that
to
they're
get
setting
up
Ricochet.
Right, maybe just to get Ospreay the belt off of Ospreay so that he can move on past Ricochet, like Rick. Nah,
it's not happening. He just won the title 2 weeks ago.
No, you know, here's the part of my problem too, Jeff, is that everyone has a belt on this show, so yes. I don't know what the lineages are of any of these freaking belts.
No, and nor should you. And it's like, I feel like I'm watching the same Dynamite every week. I gotta be honest with you. It's like, okay, here's the conglomeration match. Here's, you know, some members of the Kingdom.
Well, this week, I mean, especially as we're building to Monet versus Sheeta, which we saw 2 to 3 weeks ago. I very much had Groundhog Day experience watching this Dynamite, where I was like, have I seen this show before? I actually caught myself double checking the date. And I'm not even joking about that. Just making sure that I was watching the right one on the website.
The Young Bucks versus the Blackpool Combat Club for the AEW World Tag Titles. Okay. We cut a promo, we get a tag title match. Wheeler Yuta's taking the fall, I think. But I don't see the Young Bucks losing this.
Yeah, no, the Young Bucks don't. No, they don't lose this, and then that kind of like teases, oh, we're going to get the belt back.
By any means possible.
Yeah, in a Chicago street fight that where they took away the belt because CMLL wants nothing to do with this, Willow Nightingale versus Chris Statlander with Stokely Hathaway. I think Statlander wins this, and then eventually they have a title match in Mexico, and possibly Statlander wins that, but, you know, this will be fun.
Yeah. Statlander wins.
Kazuchika Okada versus three people to be determined. Because, again, it was like, I remember it was like, wasn't like Konosuke Takeshita in a four-way with Mortos, Commander, and Leo Rush?
You stop, Jeff, and you take my money. I am so here for this.
And then, yeah, but no, it's going to be the winner of Mark Briscoe and Lance Archer, the winner of Orange Cassidy and... Who is Orange Cassidy facing? I can't remember, but it's going to probably be Orange Cassidy in there.
Is it Jericho?
No. Oh, it's Brian Keith.
Brian Keith.
Yeah. And Mortos versus Takeshita, which should be a fun match, but okay. So instead of just building somebody for this one-on-one, all Continental Championship matches are one-on-one and there's no interference, we're going to have a bunch of... matches to go for a four-way just so that we can get to Okada and Takeshita without actually building Okada and Takeshita correctly. So basically I think Lance Archer gets pinned by Okada, and I don't see anything anyway around this. So
no, yeah, Lance Archer gets pinned by Okada. Takeshita is the featured rival of Okada in this match, and that's what we're building to after this. But
boy,
God,
that match last night.
A waste of time.
That match last night with Fletcher and Okada made me mad, because hey, we could be building this Okada-Takeshita feud because they're both members of the Don Callis, and Callis could be on commentary saying how Fletcher, you know, he's going for his friend in the Callis family. He's going to beat down Okada a little bit to make it easier to get the title, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Nope. Instead, they're putting over Fletcher as, young up-and-comer. He's going to have his day someday.
I hated Callis on commentary in this in particular for what he didn't do, which is he should have been livid at Fletcher at the end of that match because Fletcher got outfoxed by Okada.
Yes, and boy, we watched a 20-minute match just to watch a nutshot and a three.
Right, and he should have been sitting there going, like, he doesn't have the killer instinct. Okada did the right, you know, like it should have been, yes. Like, basically, he's mad that his guy wasn't more heelish.
Tell us this story. Tell us that he is financially interested in bringing this Continental Championship to the Don Callis family.
Right, that'll be the other thing. And right, there's a financial interest in doing this, that Fletcher getting the win would advance that interest, and that Callis is mad because Fletcher is instead basically following in the footsteps of his buddy Ospreay and yes. not actually getting with the program and cheating. And maybe even sort of subtext to be like, and he's not as good as Will or whatever. And like, you know, kind of like putting that little seed in there on Fletcher.
MJF versus Daniel Garcia. I did a thorough deconstruction of this thing on the Dynamite show if you want to hear it. But the basic thing was, look, Daniel Garcia had a decent promo. I think there's someone out there said make it personal. And so they've decided to make it uber, uber personal as opposed to the personal feud. We're deciding to bring up everything from somebody's personal life and bring it out in a promo. But at the same time, that whole thing of it was like a scroller arcade game, Chris, where Daniel Garcia fights off these bad guys, gets to the boss, boom, game over.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, this is what happens whenever I play Streets of Rage in the arcade.
Donkey Kong has beat him.
I don't know really how much I love Your Mother's a Whore as a promo structure.
You got hair plugs in Turkey.
Yeah, your mother's a whore. Like, all right. Cool.
You can't keep a woman. Ha 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 ha.
Oh yeah? Well, your mother's a whore, and I'm gonna sleep with her. Like
have impotence problems because you were molested as a child. You know, you don't wanna
Right, like I don't know. I think there is, for some people, this idea that stuff like that we are parodying, but is basically a literal summary of what the latent content of the promo was.
You've had depression issues for years because your parents got divorced when you were very young and you've never rectified your issues with your father.
Like, I just don't think that these are great wrestling.
No.
Beats. They don't do anything for me on that front. The best wrestling does not need, it's weird. It's like, people think that being real is inherently better wrestling, but that to me is a Vince Russoism. That to me is missing the actual relationship between intensity and the product.
The character is,
right.
is
intensity.
What makes it.
It's not authenticity, it's intensity.
Yes, just it's like Dusty is a complete fabrication.
But he's
of
intense.
Virgil Brunels. But he's authentic.
No, he's intense. He's not authentic. He's intense.
Well, it's authentic for Dusty, but yes, he's intense. Yeah,
Well, no, you said he's a complete fabrication. That's what I mean. Like, he's not authentic, but he's an intense character.
Yes.
And that's what we latch onto. Reach out to me, daddy. We relate to that.
That was the note I forgot on NXT, by the way, is this Hank and Tank doing basically bad Public Enemy and Mystery Science Theater 3000 stuff.
Oh, my God. They are Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge.
They are. They are Public Enemy on NXT. Just make them tough, guys. They don't need to be wacky. Yeah, that's all.
Hey ho,
we're from the streets. You're 40. Yeah. Stop that. Who do you have winning this? Because I still think MJF wins this in like some
so
screw
too.
Job, some screw job fashion.
I don't think Garcia prevails. So
it's like, oh, he's going to have a good move or a good match, but man, he was screwed at the last moment by MJF. Oh, that meanie MJF. Boo
and can
him.
I just say, for a build that's had blood, this is particularly bloodless to me. Like, all of this felt like the cheap way of getting to an intense feud.
I never got to be emotionally invested in the fact that MJF tried to break Daniel Garcia's neck, because I never got to see him in, like, a neck brace.
Right. And I never got to see him jump him in the neck brace afterwards.
Yeah, I never got to see the rehab. I never got to see him struggle. He just comes out one day, hey, I'm all better. I'm going to break your neck now too, MJF.
And he never had the match kind of coming back from the neck thing where he's still selling the neck thing. And
do,
like,
I still have it?
Right, he takes a bad clothesline. He's really favorite. Like, we're just all of this.
Lazy storytelling.
It's lazy, right. And that's why they have to go back to your mother's a whore. Like that, they no, because they don't do the real work.
Yes, yes.
They don't do the real work, so they do this lazy, like, trigger word stuff.
Yes, your mother's a whore. Everybody's gonna be doing that. Jesus, every promo, because every promo is now stealing from other stuff. I mean, speaking of which, Mercedes Moné versus Hikaru Shida for the AEW TBS title. I liked Sheeta's promo, though. I did. She's learned English better. She's a little more confident.
Oh, no, she's really good. She's got a lot better in English. Yeah, for sure.
Although she did steal Okada's tagline. Bitches. Camilla's barred from ringside, which means she's going to find a way back to ringside.
I want her to come out under a mask and people to be wondering who this giant masked woman is.
No, you gotta make more. She's a popcorn vendor. Look at that giant popcorn vendor who has just decided to come to ringside. Oh, wrestling is so stupid. But I'm looking
Elimac. This is not Camille. It's Elimac.
She's gonna be a camera woman.
Yeah, that's true. Right? Yeah. Right.
You know, she's gonna be dressing all black. She's gonna take off the mask. Ha ha! Look at me. I fooled you all. And
camera meal.
And Mercedes Moné will do that. I did like, they are a good pair, though, Mercedes and Camille. Like, Camille doing the everybody shut up during the promo thing, that was good.
She adds a lot to it.
Mercedes is such a flake. And it's
right. I don't know. I Mercedes promos are kind of leaving me a little.
They're empty, but they're supposed to be. I think.
Right. I can't. Right. I can't decide if they're.
She should
empty.
Call Hikaru Shida's mother a whore. Is what she should do.
Right. No. I mean, like, has she thought about insulting a member of Hikaru Shida?
Have you thought about either saying your father is dead, or your mother's a whore? Or your father's dead because your mother's a whore. Then we can get really deep.
Yeah, right? I mean, I'm going to sleep with your dad, become your new stepmom. This is what we want in AEW. These are the feuds.
That's going to be a story next week. For the AEW World title, Bryan Danielson versus Jack Perry. I had a great idea for this, but this isn't the last match of the show because it can't be. Because Strickland and Page is going to be a lights out, unsanctioned match. And they do that personally. But man, my idea for this was Christian comes out and pins Perry. Danielson retires. And everybody's like, what the hell? Now we have to watch next week. On the other hand, it was brought up to me that, yes, Christian owes the Bucks a favor. And they never mentioned Christian on this Dynamite show, which makes the absence conspicuous in some ways. I think he comes out to try to help, and Danielson overpowers the two of them.
Yeah, no, I think Danielson will thwart Christian's first couple of attempts, probably. Like, Christian will ultimately prevail and ultimately be the one who beats Danielson. But
I don't think he beats Danielson. I think he's a transition for somebody else. I think Hangman beats Danielson.
You think Hangman beats Danielson? See, I have Christian. I mean, I think Christian beats Danielson. He's a transitional champion. This finally gives you the chance to get the belt onto Christian. It would be a good little story. Danielson goes home.
I was thinking maybe Darby beats Danielson and then Hangman beats Darby, but eventually Hangman's going to win this world title. Just to throw it in Swerve's face.
Yeah. No, he's going to have to win the title at some point. But he could win it off of Danielson. You're right. Yeah.
Although I have another entry for this Strickland Page thing that I'm gonna hold off. But yes, I think Danielson does this. I'm kind of hoping Jack Perry has a really good match.
I hope he has a good match because, like, they didn't give me much of a good build, so no. I'd like to enjoy something about this Danielson-Jack Perry interaction.
That promo was okay, but, man, this could have been a program where you see Jack Perry start to become a promo guy where he's just like, look, I was this young guy. Now I'm getting my real chance at you, and I'm gonna be the one to put you out. Because that's the thing they need to hit hard on this whole thing, not just on a passing question to him, that every match you see Bryan Danielson defend this title could be his last full-time match in AEW.
Well, the other thing is that, like, Jack Perry should have Dominic Mysterio heat too, right? Like, yes. This is a great opportunity to get this guy hated. I mean, you put an armband on him that says scapegoat, you gave him the goth title, and you got him in a black leather jacket every week, but no one really hates the guy. It's all sort of neutral stuff. Dean Ambrose walks by him this week and goes, I don't care what anyone says, you're a good kid. No, this guy should be, like, the Dominic Mysterio of this company.
You know what the Moxley sweet kid thing was, though? It was
what?
A callback to Punk. If you have a problem with Jack Perry, who's the sweetest kid in the world, the problem's with you. So yes, we're still in CM Punk still lives rent free in this company.
I know, and everyone acts like I think that the funniest thing is the constant. Implicit and sometimes explicit insistence by AEW and AEW's fans that Phil Brooks, CM Punk was irrelevant when he was in AEW.
Yeah, no.
Because clearly he's still relevant to them now that he's gone. They've never gotten over this breakup.
It's a drill tweet. It's the drill tweet. Oh, I'm not gonna do.
As our company turns into a corn cob.
Yes. And then finally, in an unsanctioned lights out steel cage match, the battle of baby faces.
honestly, no more easily relatable characters on AEW television than Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland.
Swerve Strickland versus if he can get out of prison in time for arson, Hangman Adam Page. Now, look, this is. The funny thing is watching people who hate WWE go, man, that was really powerful.
I know. That stuff kills me because I'm like, okay, so there's many problems with this as a go-home angle, but the most obvious one to me is how in God's name would Hangman ever be able to make bail for this? You need to do this at least a week prior to give yourself 1 week or 2 weeks to explain how, like, the idea, if you're gonna burn down Swerve's house, as ridiculous as this story is, you would do this on week one of the 4 week angle. Like, Paige burns down the house, and then week two, Swerve wants the match. Week three, we have the contract signing. Or maybe you do that week two and three. Week four, we have the contract signing and the go home. But you can't do this 3 days before on camera, because even the crowd knows this is arson.
Randy Orton did this to Bray Wyatt in a match. This is all the fault of the Monday Night Wars, these types of things, because it used to be, you know, you get hit by a car, maybe a little bit aggravated assault, you know, not quite attempted murder. We're going into high crimes now. I mean, this is also the fault of, like, Lucha Underground and NXT, which are killing characters on their TV and stuff
okay,
like that.
Okay, but no, here's the thing. I know I'm not going to lay that at the doorstep of Lucha Underground, because Lucha Underground's entire world existed parallel to, like, it. They weren't, like, in Los Angeles. You know what I mean? Like, they're in, like, the Lucha Underground universe.
Okay.
WWE, AEW, like, when they're in Chicago, they're in Chicago. Like, you know, there's not, like, a kayfabe, you know, subworld in this.
So Swerve Strickland brags about stalking outside of Hangman's house, and Hangman decides to go to the house that Hangman bought The wording
Swerve
on the
bought with the money from his re-signing.
Yes. Well, it was funny because the tweet was poorly worded. And so I thought he had bought Nana's childhood home and given it to Nana. But yes, this is Swerve Strickland's childhood home. And not only does he decide to torture, he decides to sit in a lazy boy and with his back turned to it.
The CGI, this was CGI'd very poorly. The flames were so unbelievably close to Adam Page. If for some reason this was not CGI, this was incredibly reckless to have this guy this close to open flames.
Well, they had the fire department there. Who do you have winning this? Because I have Page winning this.
I think Page wins this.
Okay. And then we figure out where to go from there, I guess. You know what's killed me also is people are also saying, you know what this is? This is layers of character development. I go, no, this is you making that
hell
up
no,
because
it
it's
isn't.
Poor writing.
Hell no, it ain't.
This is the last two seasons of Game of Thrones when all they have is exposition left because they don't have the books and the rich dialogue and you thinking it's clever because you like the product. Don't give me that this is like layered. In any way, it's too. The thing is, it's two bad guys. So to me, the solution is Samoa Joe comes in and kills them both. But I don't think that's going to happen either. But we're still supposed to think Swerve is the babyface in this.
I know. We're still in the end. We're still supposed to like Swerve Strickland, and we're supposed to think that he is a babyface in this feud. And I can't get there with this guy anymore.
Oh, and by the way, can we? Kyle O'Reilly has taken a turn for the annoying.
Oh yeah, cool promo. Kyle. We are fully back to cool Kyle.
We are back to cool Kyle, and we need to stop this. We need to put a stop to this right now. I am not having this upstaging of Mark Briscoe in his promos, where he's pretending to talk. I just want Mark to turn around and punch him. Say, stop stealing my moment. I got nothing else for AEW. Did you have anything that stood out to you?
I think Deonna Purrazzo, I have been told that she's better in pre-tapes than she is in live interviews, but I thought even in this pre-tape, the line deliveries on this were unbelievably stiff.
Oh, yeah. They were stiff. She's not on Dynamite. This is a pre-tape for a Collision where she sometimes wins and sometimes loses against Thunder Rosa. I didn't understand the placement. I got to be honest with you. The other thing that was kind of stiff, and it's explained by them watching an iPad, I guess. But that Roddy segment looked like they had forgotten to roll tape and have action to have action before rolling tape. So they're just kind of standing there for a beat doing nothing. And then they start chatting. Almost it's like, and go. I just thought.
We're live,
so
pal.
We're live, pal. Yeah. And speaking of which, let's just end the Lazy River there and go into some other Vader Club Sid memories. Cause I watched 89 Bash again. I watched the War Games he was in where he almost brutalized Pillman. And of course I watched a lot of Sid squash matches. The Lee Scott ones are fantastic. And I actually watched a WWF match. I watched that Shawn Michaels title match where he's psycho Sid versus, and he's pretty good at it. Number one, the thing that always comes out to me on this, number one, if you watch the Bash and the tag team against the Dynamic Dudes, I had forgotten they were booing Dan Spivey when he was in the ring because they wanted Sid to come in there so badly and kill Johnny Ace and Shane Douglas, which is hilarious. The other thing is that Sid gave no Fs about trying to work the crowd, no matter if he was a heel or a babyface. He'd work it the same.
Yeah.
He was looking for babyface pops even when he was a heel. It was kind of amazing that more people didn't get angry at him about this.
I think that's got to be – maybe it's just this thing. It's like – we talked about this last time. It's that when he's doing it, he's not doing it in this sabotaging way. It's just Sid's way of doing things.
This is Sid being Sid.
Yeah.
In so many ways. That latter stage Nitro stuff is terrible. I couldn't get through it. I could not get through it. I was like, God, I thought his 90 and 91 stuff wasn't good. But then I watched his late stage, the stuff with Benoit, and where they're trying to get him to be like an actual work rate guy, and you're just like, no, 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 no.
It's not how you use him. I am, as we are chatting right now, I pulled back up Sid versus Steve Austin. And let me tell you, I think that this is like, you know, it's 5 minutes. It gets broken up by Bret Hart and Steve fighting it out. But I think Sid and Austin's really entertaining for what it is.
This is when he's still kind of, he's not the,
Austin's not fully Mecha Austin yet.
No, he's not Stone. He may have just gotten the Stone Cold moniker from being the ringmaster.
Yeah.
He still has the $1 million belt. He has the shaved head and everything, but he's not yet, walking down the ring with a few Steve Weisers, Steve Austin with the glass breaking. He's still kind of having that like classical music thing going on. And I think he might still be with DiBiase at this point, or maybe DiBiase has left to join the NWO.
Nah, he's already feuding with Bret Hart. So yeah, I think DiBiase's left at this point. It's 97. DiBiase joins the NWO in 96.
Okay. You got the time. I got a lot of years on me, Chris. I can't remember all this stuff.
No, I lived through I lived through that. That was like my childhood wrestling right there, 96, 97.
Yeah, I mean, the Bulldog Sting versus Sid Vader match is good for what it is. But yeah, they're looking to do more things with Sid and WCW, and then he just jumped again.
Yeah, and I like the build in a lot of ways. I like the build to Shawn Michaels at the Survivor Series match. I was watching some of that. There's a super cut that's about 30 minutes. It just kind of focuses on the prelim matches and all that stuff.
I watched the the press conference after the 92 Rumble. I think when they're trying to, like, Jack Tunney's having this thing, and just Sid's in this, like, light blue tracksuit or something.
Yeah.
The seething.
It's
wonderfully horrible is what it is.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Okay.
No, yeah. I'm fine. I'm fine. Somebody is calling me, even though I said I was tied up and not to call right now.
Okay. Next week I'm going to get some Vader on Vader Club for next week. I don't know what yet, but if you have any ideas, throw me some in Twitter. I'm at Crap Game 13. The show's at Shake Them Ropes on Elon Musk's X. Chris is on Spotify at it's at Chris Novembrino, right?
Yeah, it's just Chris Novembrino. It's my name.
Yeah, and then on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices Wrestling Podcasting Network. I also do a show on Fight Game Media on Wednesday nights called The Dynamite Show, about 20 minutes after the show goes off the air. Paul Fontaine and myself are live on YouTube. The audio drops in your podcatcher the next day for free. Look that up under Fight Game Media. Chris is going to plug his stuff.
Yeah, go to my Spotify, Chris Novembrino on Spotify. Go to my Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. Get guitar lessons from me. Subscribe to my Spotify. If you don't subscribe to my Spotify, bad things will happen.
Finland will go to war with you.
Yeah.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.